It was during her preparation for the galactic structure class that she noted a further anomaly. "Hernando," she asked the young postdoc who worked with her, "why should cars all drive down the highway at speeds in multiples of 5? Hernando Kelly was from Costa Rico, a Tico as they call themselves. He was bronze, distressingly well-built, and climbed sheer rock faces for recreation. With his arm in a sling, sometimes the rock faces win, Sharon had put him to work mining databases and compiling the results. He scratched his head and tried to imagine what the question had really been about. 'At multiples of 5? He said, hinting for clarification. "Right. The cars are going 50, 55, 60, 65, and so on. You haven't reached the speeds on the blue route yet." White teeth showed behind a black mustache. "So nobody's going like 62 or 57 or something?" At Sharon's nod, he shook his head. "Okay. I'll bite. Why?" "I don't know," she answered happily. "I thought you knew because you were the one who told me." She held up a frequency distribution, one of several dozen he had printed off a Minitab from the Galactic Empire database. "Distribution of Galactic Redshifts," read the title above the chart. "Notice anything?"
"Well, yeah, it's comb-shaped. That means the measurement resolution is coarser than the plotting scale. So you get empty bins in the histogram. I'll rescale the chart."
"Measurement resolution," she said.
"Right," he said, a bit wary, for he recognized the manic tone in her voice.
"Uh-huh," she answered. "Quantized. Redshifts are quantized. Galaxies are receding at certain speeds, and not at speeds in between."
"Why?"
"I don't know," she enthused. "That would only be an answer. And I've got something much more precious. I've got a question."
Kelly didn't see the big deal. It was like the light speed business. That had been a real bitch because not all the literature was of equal quality. Some reports lacked the original data, some reworked previous data, some were duplicates. In some, the measurement method had been poor, or the techniques for using it had not yet been perfected. "Just compile all the data," the Ice Queen had told him. Oh, yeah, nothing easier. It was all measurement error, he was convinced. Light speed, now red shifts. He had seen cone-shaped histograms when he had worked summers at a metal fabricator in San Jose. The gauge had read out in increments of 0.002 inches, and the plotting scale had increments of 0.001 inches. Odd numbers need not apply. He hoped the rumor wasn't true and Dr. Nagy wouldn't lose her grant because of her religious obsession. He liked working with the Ice Queen. It was a few weeks later that Sharon saw the answer, and it was a stunner. 14, February 1348, Candlemas to the Ember Days. Candlemas Day was a work holiday. At Primes, the villagers gathered on the green, and Joaquin distributed candles to all, including the two baptized Krenken. The other Krenken stayed to themselves or watched from the edge of the green with photographic devices. Dietrich blessed the candles, while Joaquin sang the Nunc Dimittis. When all was ready, they formed up in procession. Klaus and Hildegard took their accustomed places immediately behind Dietrich, reminding Dietrich irresistibly of the parable about those who would be first. Chanting the anthem, Adorna Thalamum Tuum Siam, Dietrich led the river of light through the early dawn, along the high street and up the hill toward St. Catherine, where he spied Theresia kneeling in the damp grass beside the church. But as the procession drew nearer, she stood and ran off. Dietrich's tongue stumbled and nearly lost its place in the anthem, but he sang the line Obtulerunt pro eo domino as he passed through the church doors, as was customary. Later that day, a faint yodel from the watchtower on the Oberide Road announced the approach of a horseman. The Krenken hid themselves at Manfred's request and did not emerge until the horseman, a messenger from the Strasbourg bishop, departed on a fresh horse an hour later. Bertolt had summoned the lords of the Elsass and the Breisgau to meet at Benfeld on the 8th and discuss unrest in the Swiss. "I'll be gone a week or more," Manfred told the ministerial summoned to his hall. "Too many lords will attend to hope for anything shorter." Naming Ritter Thierry Burgvogt in his absence and dispatching Bertrand Unterbaum to the Swiss to bring back a report, Manfred and his retinue departed the next day. Rumors swirled in his wake. It was said that Bern had put some Jews on the pyre in November over the well poisonings, and had written to the imperial cities to urge the same action on them. Strasbourg and Freiburg had done nothing, but in Basel the people rioted, and although the council banished the most notorious Jew-baiters from the city, they compelled the council to place the Jews in protective custody on an island in the Rhine. Dietrich complained to those who had gathered at Walpurger Honig's cottage to drink her honey-wheat beer. "The Pope commands we respect the persons and property of the Jews. There was no cause for such treatment. The pest never reached the Swiss. It went up through France and into England." "Perhaps," Everard suggested, "because Bern's swift action scared the poisoners off." Bern actually found the poison, it was said. Everard had heard it from Gunther, who had overheard the bishop's messenger. A concoction of spiders, frogs, and the skin of a basilisk had been sewn into thin leather bags that Rabbi Peyrit of Chambéry gave to the silk merchant Agimet to drop into wells in Venice and Italy. Had he not been captured on his return, he might have done the same in the Swiss. Dietrich protested. "His Holiness wrote that the Jews cannot be spreading the pest, for they themselves die." Everard tapped a finger aside his nose. "But not so many of them as us, eh? Why do you suppose that is? Because they bob up and down while they pray? Because every Friday they air their bedding out? Pah! Besides, the Kabbalists despise their fellow Jews as much as they do us. They're as secretive as Masons, and won't allow other Jews to study the hidden writings." "And hidden writings might be anything. Devil spells, recipes for poisons, anything." Klaus said, "We should place a guard around our own well."
"Meyer," said Gregor, "we have here no Jews."
"But we have them." And Klaus pointed to Hans, who, though he drank no beer, squatted among them for the talk.
"Just yesterday I saw the one called Zachary standing by the well."
Gregor snorted. "Do you hear what you are saying, man? Standing by the well?" Nothing was ever settled when men complained over steins of beer, and Hans said afterwards, "I see now how a folk can worry themselves into agitation." Then after further thought he added, "Should they try to banish Krenken as they did Jews, I cannot answer for the outcome." On St. Agatha's Day, Dietrich recited the Mass alone. There were the sick and lame to pray for. Walpurger Honig had suffered a kick from her mule, Gregor's older son Karl was laid up with a fever, and Franz Ambach had asked prayers for the repose of his mother, who had gone to her reward this past month. Dietrich asked also the intercession of St. Christopher for Bertrand's safe return from Basel. He gave thanks again that the pest had gone to England and not to the high woods. It was sinful to take joy from the suffering of others, but Oberhochwald's good fortune was annexed to it, and England's misfortune was in that annex that he took joy. "Memento etiam domine," he prayed. "Famulorum famulorumque tuarum Lawrence Schmidt et Beatrix Ambach et Arnold Krenk, qui nos precesserunt cum signo fidei, et dormeunt in somno pacis." He wondered if that were true about the Krenkish alchemist. He had certainly died with the sign of faith clutched in his hands, but self-murder was normally a bar to heaven. Yet God moved no tragedy but that some good might come of it, and seeing how affected the visitors were by their companion's death, many of the Hochwalders, who had before been wary or fearful of the Krenken, now greeted them openly and, if not warmly, with less marked hostility. As he put the sacred vessels away, he thought to go by Theresia's cottage. Lately he had invented reasons for pausing there. Yesterday she had told him about Walpurga's leg and that she had set the bone. Dietrich had thanked her and waited for her to say more, but she had dipped her head and closed her window shutters.